So namaste and welcome to another satsang. Yeah, I'm surprised that our newest initiate's not here today, Bridget. Yeah, but that's okay. Maybe she'll call this week and we'll find out what happened. I don't, maybe she thought I was already going to Chicago. Because she's, I think she's usually here for satsang. So, that could be why. So, anyway, update. I'm not sure if we're going to have the sannyas January 10th or not. I have to check with Swamiji. Swamiji was just in another accident. Yeah. He's okay. He's not in the hospital. He's home. I don't know all the particulars. I got an email from him yesterday that he was in another car accident. So I'll have to see what's going on with him. So at this point, I'm not sure if we're going to have sannyas or not. He was thinking about canceling because some of his sadhakas were kind of getting cold feet. So I'll have to wade in and find out exactly what's going on and speak with them and find out what's going on and see if we can clear it up. So that's what's going on in L.A., still working on getting the corporation thing done. Just heard from him today. He started the new practice. The guy that's doing the corporation and is Zooming. He's doing, put together a new music thing that will be on his site. Something to do with the guru or something. I don't know. After he did the practice, he's whizzing. So he's doing music again, too. Combination bank manager and musicians. This is interesting. So, only in LA, you know. So, yeah, that's interesting. And the news on this front is Daya finally made his decision. Go forward. Yeah. So, Daya's on board and still working things out in India. He went to court and he goes back to court again this next Tuesday and things are going well. He said he felt Ganesh there and he felt I was there and the grace was there and he just kept doing the relaxed breathing the whole time. So that's going, it's going as well as can be expected. So that's what's going on in India. And as you know, I leave for Chicago on Wednesday, but I will be back Saturday, so we will have satsang next Sunday. I get out of nothing. Yeah, no. No, I have to work no matter what. I get no time off. And Miss Roddy Boo Boo, you have to get down for a minute so that we can do the questions here. So with no further ado, we will start going through the questions for satsang today. The first question is, what are good ways to discharge? For those that are not quite familiar with what discharging is, it's what happens when things, cellular memory and things start releasing. We call it discharging. So all of a sudden you'll find yourself embroiled in some type of an emotional upheaval that can be triggered by anything, and it really usually has not much to do with really what's going on. So This is called discharging. And the thing is, when you're going through discharging, is to immediately go into the relaxed breathing and step back into witness state and understand what's coming up has nothing to do with what's going on in the world now. So try not to color what's going on now. With the discharging, try not to chase after the mind too much. Just, it's really, really important at that point to do the relaxed breathing and to just sit with it and see that it's going to run its course. And if you can kind of look at it, what's discharging, and see if you can look at the root of it, where it started, and then confront it. And see that really, in the end, it doesn't have much to do with reality in your world. Because, again, if it's not liberating, then it's an illusion of truth. It's something that needs to be gotten rid of. Otherwise, you chase after it. You need the mic.
Otherwise, you can chase after it and then have to go through a whole nother cycle. Before you return back again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you can kind of look at the root of it, like a lot of my stuff, I had, you know, the trauma, PTSD trauma things that would come up, and like going back in the same situation and really look at what was holding it in place was myself. And yeah, events happened, okay, but they're past, you know, and I have to be willing to let go of it. And then you look at the psychology surrounding it. And in my case, because I went through so many of these things, I had to look and see that the people actually that perpetrated the trauma things that I was going through, that really they needed to have some compassion. Because if people could do such negative things, that they're living in a hell realm. People that perpetrate such types of crimes and things live in hell realms, so they deserve compassion. And once you can move out of anger and hate to compassion, then that you can start to diffuse things as well. Yes.
I was wondering if there are any physical techniques to help you through that, such as certain kinds of exercises or like having a little tantrum to yourself or something like that.
I don't really advise having the tantrum because sometimes then all you do is solidify it a little more. Then you'd start gravitating to it and making it more real than it needs to be again. I know that some places say, yeah, what? So, you know, rather than doing a tantrum, if you want to do something physical, yeah, go out and run or, you know, something like that, and just see that it's discharging without feeding the attending anger. Rather than labeling it as something, just see it as an energy and then do what you can do to help to release the energy of it. But yeah, don't buy into the mental stuff and, you know, it's this person and then you're beating the thing, you know, like you're beating that person, you know. Sometimes people will have you do that, you know, and see the kind of like, you know, we don't want to do that. But yeah, you could do something like running or some type of a physical to help discharge the energy, but just don't label it whatever drama that's coming up. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, discharging, this happens a lot along the way. We have things that begin to unlock and anything can set it off.
And if they...
You have to turn it on first. Yeah.
Okay. When... pretty much when those happen, and if it happens right at the time that something is going on, how, I'm like, you have to think there's some sort of relation I mean, wouldn't there be some sort of correlation, or is it all just...
Sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. Now, what happened, like I spoke with this a little bit before, when I went to the UK, I was flying through, I met one of the students. He came to the airport to see me, had an expectation that wasn't met. And unfortunately, just being around the energy, he started discharging and then wanted to wrap it up around the event of not being given Dixie at the airport, which had really little to do with the whole thing. It was a lot of old past garbage, things that were coming up. So this is why I say, you know, try not to project it onto something that's happening now. It could be something as little as some feeling of disappointment or something in your life. You've had some disappointment, and then it, once again, it triggers all this old drama about disappointment or whatever, but it really, you know, doesn't have a lot to do with what's going on at hand, that it's necessarily that related to it. It could be just some type of a similar feeling or something, and then all of a sudden it just triggers a lot of other things going on. Okay, next question is, what's the difference between me and I? Me is more of a personality, this me, what. And when we use I, sometimes use it more as a generalized feeling of just beingness. But me is beingness with a lot of content added. So that's the difference between me and I. Me is more, I would say it's heavier, it's more impact related. So you want to try to get into like a witness. Like today, somebody had gotten a hold of me, the MSN, and they were speaking about being in an expanded awareness and witnessing the witness. Well, there's still an I there that's witnessing, but it's not a me that's holding on to seeing. There's witnessing happening. But it's not like some people say, oh, yeah, I'm in the moment and I'm witnessing. But they're really more focused seeing rather than just pure awareness, which would be coming more from a little less congealed identity. It's more the expansive, you can say, it's more the I. Yes,
the eye of being rather than the eye of personal storyline.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little more expanded state. You say I or witness. I or witness. Witness, when you step into witness state, you don't feel like there is a me story going on, that it's more of awareness. You're just becoming aware. There's just awareness of what's happening without coloring it with a lot of other things going on. And then there's something even beyond this feeling of an I. I is kind of a misnomer. When you get to absolute, there's no feeling of I, even though it's the essence of our being. So you have me, I, and then you have absolute. So it just keeps getting more subtle and more subtle. Okay. Next. Why is checking in important? What goes on with it? Checking in is important because I need to be up to date with what's going on with you. So that if you start to kind of go off track, we can get it settled before you get really way off track. And it also, when you're checking in, there's also the connection that continues to happen. And so the connection is very, very important for transmission to be ongoing. That's very important. So in order to get the best help you can get, it's best to check in. So we, because I'm working with a lot of people, you know, I'm working with a lot of people, and I need to know with what's going on with you at this moment in consciousness so we can deal with it in the best way that we can to move you forward the most rapid way. Yes?
I've noticed on the emails that most of the people have a really long question or something very intense going on, but if you're just in your routine and nothing outstanding is happening, I don't notice that people are just checking in and saying, I'm fine, see ya. But is that something we should be doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Even just to say I'm fine or there's really not too much change, then at least we know where you're at, you know, and how long you've been there, or just to make sure that you're not, you know, going into a grand funk or something, you know. So, yeah, it's important to check in with whatever's happening or not happening, as the case may be. If it, not too much is going on, then I'll ask you, what are you doing every day? How much time are you putting into meditation? Are you doing the mantras? And if you've fallen back, then we'll find out why. You know, it could be that there's too much externalization going on and being caught up in the world and not so much attention to the practice and to putting the flow into effect. And then, of course, at that point, then we'll tell you to it's time to step up the practice or put in a little more effort in one way or another to get you moving again. So, yeah, it's important to check in. Even if you don't feel you have a whole lot to say at that time, it's still important to check. Okay, next. I can get it unwound here. Discrimination. When is the urge to merge just as with beauty of form or nature or people? Okay, I need to have this explained a little more. Who's the urge to merge?
When is it lust?
Oh, okay.
When is the urge to merge lust as the urge to merge with something of beauty in nature?
Are we speaking with physical relationships or just...
Including physical relationship, including nature, including all things, the urge to become one with it, that sense of wanting to merge. When is it lust?
Okay, if it has to do with a person and it has to do with having your needs met and it has to do with just, you know, this big sexual urge is coming up, then it's lust. You know, it's pretty straightforward. Of course, the more you expand, the more you come into oneness with nature and you let go all of the barriers and things, and then it becomes more of a merge type state. I don't think it can ever really be called lust when you're merging with nature, when it's, you know, that's not. Lust is only has to do with people, and it only has to do with, you know, having basically your physical desires, wanting to have those taken care of, rather than really merging with somebody on a...
heart level.
On a heart level. Yeah.
So if there isn't that physical demand, then it's innocent, basically.
If it's, yeah, then it's more bhakti if you can surrender to that. That's mm-hmm. that's different. Bhakti, surrender in the heart, is different than just, you know, animal passion, just wanting to have the physicality.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah. If it's just the physicality and there's no heart, that's lust.
I understand.
Okay. But, of course, if you're going to have absolutely that heart thing, of course, physicality eventually is going to come up more than likely as well.
Hmm? Yes, but that's not the original intent. That's just as a byproduct.
That's, yeah, it's a byproduct when you're in relationship, yeah. Yeah. So we spoke a little bit about this before. You know, if you're in relationship and you have a real heart connection with your partner, and then you see your partner as absolute divinity, as Shiva and Shakti, and you honor that, it takes it to a whole different level. You're not thinking at that point just about lust, you know, and physical, oh, how is this going to feel for me, you know. If you're absolutely surrendered to your partner as either Shiva or Shakti, then it's going to go in a different, into a little bit different cognition.
And the other question that goes along with that, what if it doesn't discriminate necessarily between one individual to another?
I'm not getting.
In other
what
words, you may have that urge to merge with randomly throughout society, looking at all kinds of people, but there's no intent to take it any further. But the bhakti thing is present regardless of where you're at or who you're in contact with.
Well, there's a difference in feeling that bhakti and overwhelming, you know, love for somebody versus the sexuality part of it. But yeah, this will come up eventually when bhakti starts to develop, that you'll just have this sense of warmth toward everyone. Yeah. The thing is that at that point, not to confuse it with the lust and the physical, not to wrap it around the physicality of it. Sometimes it's difficult for some people to be able to separate the two. Especially in the beginning, that sometimes takes place. But it's important to be able to distinguish the two. That just because you have a great heart opening does not mean that you need to go forward and have sexual act with it as well. Moving onward. Apathy. We just got one word, apathy. So I guess the question is just to speak on apathy. What's apathy versus vairagya? Okay. We had another comment on this in an email recently. There's a vast difference between non-attachment and apathy. Apathy is just not giving a rat's ass about anything. You like that? Rat's ass? Not giving a rat's ass about anything. I don't feel like doing anything. I'm not motivated, blah, blah, blah. That has nothing to do with vairagya, non-attachment. In vairagya, you can be quite active, enjoy what's there, but not be attached to it. Like somebody give me a candy bar, I can enjoy it immensely in that moment, but I don't need to chase another one right after it. if someone's here, you can really enjoy their company, but still not be attached, not feel like you have to cling or you have to hang on to them or you have to hold it, you know. Things become fluid. So there's a very big difference between apathy and non-attachment. Non-attachment does not mean pushing away. Vairagya doesn't mean you have to push things away, that you have to be with nothing.
I know in the chanting, one of the interpretation was to paralyze the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And since most of our activities are egocentric, if the ego is paralyzed, most of your activities seem to drop away. And you may
they drop away as being as chasing things. You can be without ego and still be fluid in the flow of the moment.
So if you are feeling like with this question of apathy, you're feeling like, well, why should I do all these things? You know, they are basically meaningless.
Yeah, people go through this on the path, and it's once again, when things start to slow down and you're not used to it, you can easily segue into apathy. And people hear, well, you don't need to attach to doing, don't be the doer, so then they become apathetic. It doesn't mean that you still don't put things into practice, but you are not the one that's going to cause this to take effect. Grace causes it to take effect. You need to get yourself out of the way and continue to do things. It's a big difference. It's a big difference between, oh, I'm going to do the practice, and because I do it, I'm going to get this place. But as long as there's an I that's going to get to this place and I'm making it happen, you're not getting ego out of the way. It's being done through ego. And then people, well, if I need to surrender, then I'm just not going to do anything. Well, apathy is not surrender either. So people have a bit of a confusion about what is surrender. Surrender can be an active thing. If you actively surrender, actively let go, it's not apathy. I'm just not going to do anything. There's a difference in surrendering and I'm not going to do anything. One is a positive and the other sets up a negative dynamic.
So you keep doing everything, but there's no personal attachment to the outcome.
Right.
You do everything, you surrender everything that you do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not the doer any longer.
Right. You surrender it up to God. Not my will, but thine be done. Christ didn't just walk around and say, well, God's going to do it, so I'm not going to do anything. Didn't work that way. Not my will, but thine be done. He was surrendered in his actions. He did all through, you know, it was the grace of God that's going to move, the grace that energy is going to move, but one doesn't become apathetic. Well, since the world is no more than a dream state, since the absolute is all, why do anything? No. You enjoy the fragrance. You know exactly what it is. Doesn't mean you don't enjoy the fragrance for what it is. But yeah, when things start to slow down, then one can have a tendency to go into apathy and confuse surrender with just not doing. or people take the stance that, well, everything is karma, it's all destiny. Why should I do anything? It doesn't matter. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. No, everyone has free will. And what you do now determines your destiny in the future. It determines your karma in the future. What you change now changes everything in the future. But if you go along with this apathetic thing, you're going to stay stuck right where you are, and nothing's going to change. And in fact, you'll just slide downhill, because then you'll become very morose and negative. So one can either enter a positive mindset or a negative. And whether you are in the positive or the negative is up to you. That's free will. So my suggestion is to take the positive path of surrender and leave apathy outside the door. Let's see what this is. When in meditation, what is the inner light and sound and vibration? Do you pay attention to it or keep on the given practices beyond practice and inner phenomena by grace only? Can I read that again? Hey, are you kidding? It was hard enough to get through once, and you want me to read it again? I can try. When in meditation, what is the inner light and sound vibration? Do you pay attention to it or keep on the given practices beyond practice and inner phenomena by grace only? Okay. As you're doing the practices, and once Kundalini begins to activate, yes, sometimes you will see lights, inner lights. Sometimes you'll see them externally. Sometimes you'll be aware of the nod, the sound, and that may be ongoing. You know, some traditions teach it, you stick the fingers in the ear and you try to hear the inner sound and try to see the light. Well, once Kundalini starts, you may wish that the nod would just shut off for a while. It can become very loud and very overpowering. So the thing is, yeah, some traditions say, okay, you hear the sound and you go into the sound and you can try to follow the sound back to its source. Where did it originate from? So that is a technique that some people use. I say just go ahead and kind of ignore them and just continue on with your practices, and they'll continue to unfold. Phenomena is phenomena. It all has to do with motion, movement. We want to come to that point of stillness, which is beyond the light and the sound. Absolute is beyond light and sound. All light and sound, it makes it possible for them to be in the first place, but within it, there is no light and sound as such. Even though we say it's the light of all lights, it's beyond light. So just continue with the practice and continue to surrender. That's all. Because what happens if you start chasing light and start chasing sound, then you're going to have a tendency to continue to hold it in place. And you want to get beyond that. Okay? So we don't necessarily want to establish light and sound. It's not the end all, the be all. of where we're trying to get. We're trying to get beyond the light and the sound to find out even what is the source of the light and sound. Light and sound is a little more subtle than what you're seeing physically. So, yeah, okay, that's a step forward, but we want to go even beyond that.
And that's why you stick with the practices and let them happen as they happen.
Yeah, you just stick with the practices, and you're not going to attach any undue appointment point, any due attention to the light and sound. Let me know what's happening. Depending on the sound, depending on the light, I can tell, you know, how much of a subtle realm experience you're having, how far you're moving forward, what's, you know, there are indicators along the way, that's all. I just say, okay, you're passing another signpost. Okay, but there's more road to go. So don't get hung up on standing there staring at that light, that signpost. Wow, what a great sign. Better you go to your destination than get stuck along the way staring at a signpost. Good drugs. Whoa. That's so great. It's such a such a vivid thing, seeing the guy stumbling along, just stopping at this signpost, just staring at it, not moving forward. What is the best or strongest way to clear negative energies from oneself and one's apartment? By understanding there are no negatives. Okay. All the so-called negative things are, once again, things that are put into motion, vibrations that are put into motion by mind, mental stuff. So just change the mental thing. If you're doing a lot of meditation, what happens? You're raising the vibration. Okay? Raise the vibration of where you're at. If you understand what negative things come from, that they come from ignorance. If you move beyond ignorance, then what happened to that negative? Has no existence. Christ never had any fear of any negative thing, because in his world it had no more existence. Don't validate it. Okay? It's like people that want to go and put the white light around themselves and I need to protect myself. They never needed protection from anything until they started doing that. You ever notice that? Huh? So what you're doing is, in it sounds real good at the beginning. Well, I'm going to do this really positive thing and protect myself. Well, then you're going to find something you need protection from because you're putting that into motion. Why to put that into motion? So, yeah, just let go of the negative. If you want it to be clear, just let go of it. Right, doesn't exist outside the mind. Yeah, I had a real battle with stuff like this going through my journey. At one point, somebody that was in Hawaii sent some really negative, nasty things toward me. And because I was in fear, what happened? I was sitting there in absolute terror. I'm surprised my hair didn't turn white. I was in the middle of the floor just cowering with, you know. And I would fight it and I would do all these things, you know, until eventually I found out that I finally surrendered and said, okay, God, then everything I can do, I can't do anymore. You know, you're the one that's going to have to take care of this, pull me through, whatever. And when it came, that was it. I sat through it, and that was the end of it. Finished. Gone. Boom. because I finally had surrendered and quit fighting against or giving it any importance. Because then what happens is we tend to solidify it and give it substance. We're the ones that are giving it substance. And when I no longer gave it substance and gave it attention, it had nothing to feed on. When it has nothing to feed on, it's not going to hang around there. So it goes back to where it came from. And it destroyed the one that sent it in the first place because it had no entrance. It can't have any entrance if you're not feeding it. If you don't give opening to it.
Now, what if beyond yourself, because of more in your mind, if you're sensing it, of course, but other people sense that energy too, at the same time or same areas?
Well, yeah, because there's only self? Yeah, because we're only one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if somebody has a real strong aversion or something, it's going to set up. Other people can feel it as well. You can feel what's going on with someone else. Once again, just, turn it around. Let go of it.
There's a sci-fi classic called Forbidden Planet where these people were trying to resist this monster. And the more they resist, the bigger and stronger it got. And when they became very passive, the monster disappeared because it had no energy.
Yep, same thing. Same thing. Sometimes we have to learn it in a difficult way. Like in my case, I had to learn it the hard way. It was a valuable lesson to learn not to feed negatives. But yeah, the longer you say, oh yeah, this is negative, and the longer you feed it, it's going to hang around. It's being fed. Yeah, Christ said, resist not evil. Doesn't mean you entertain it, but, once again, you don't give it any, don't give the validity to it. So those are the questions of the day. We have no more questions unless somebody else has a question. Yes.
My question is, we serve others, and some people say, wait till enlightenment, and then you're really serving others, but before you're enlightened, should you still serve others?
You can, but you can only serve others up to the point of your own knowledge. It's what people have to understand. It doesn't mean that you can't give something, but you can only give what you have to give. So you find a way to serve and up to the level that you're at, that of what you can give. Some people, unfortunately, they want to try to serve and they want to drag everybody else out of their own mess, out of their messes, and they can't even get out of their own yet. So they're not qualified to be teaching at that level yet. When you're out of your own mess, then you know the way out and you can help other people. You can give them some kind of a guide map. But if you can't even find your way out of your own, how are you going to help in that type of an aspect? You bring them to the guru. Well, you could do that. But, there are some things that you can do in society, of course. I mean, you're trained to be a doctor. So, yeah, you can help in that level. The rest of us can't go around and, help in internal medicine. It's not what we're trained in. It's not the knowledge that we have. So everyone helps in where they're at the level they're at. Of course, yeah. It's kind of like somebody that's embroiled in a heavy domestic dispute and they're trying to give relationship advice to everyone. You know? And they can't even live in their own without... But yet they're trying to tell the world that they can tell you how to do it. But they can't do it for themselves. This is why I'm saying, you know, you can't heal the world unless you can heal yourself. And once you've healed yourself, then you find out the world is going to pretty much take care of itself. And the world has to heal itself through its own endeavors eventually. You can only give signs and guideposts along the way. And so on that note, we're done with the satsang today, and we'll go ahead and maybe we're not done with satsang today. Oh, you want to check the to make sure it's off? Good. So at this point, we'll go ahead and go into some meditation. Do some meditation now. So thank you for coming. Thank you for stumbling along with me through satsang today. Namaste.